Coming up on Tech News Today, T-Mobile shouts death to subsidies. Maybe they don't shout. Maybe they don't use those exact words, but we'll tell you what they do say. FCC tells the FAA, come on, let people use their iPads during takeoff. They don't talk like that. Netflix's naughty Facebook post, though, will be read almost verbatim. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, December 7th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Lantronics, maker of the X-Print server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code HOLIDAY2012 to receive 20% off on your order. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the stories that are important in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh really doesn't want to deal with Samsung and Apple anymore, at least their lawyers. During a court hearing on Thursday, Judge Koh told lawyers, I think it's time for global peace. Those were her exact words. Samsung is asking for a retrial, possibly Judge Koh's worst nightmare, while Apple is asking that the $1 billion award be increased. Judge Koh indicated she might revise the award amount down, but made no other indications how she would rule.
If you run a small business with 10 or fewer employees and love the Google Apps productivity suite because, well, it's free, let's hope you really, really love it, because now it's going to cost you $50 per year, the same rate as what it would cost a larger business. In a blog post today, Google explained the move is meant to focus on the quality of the business experience, large or small.
T-Mobile's shaking up its business model. Starting next year, T-Mobile will stop subsidizing phones. If you're afraid of sticker shock on the price of a phone, T-Mobile will let you pay for your device on an installment plan. The company will also move to its value plan system, which means lower cost monthly plans.
California's attorney general has sued Delta Airlines for not including a privacy policy in Delta's mobile app. The suit filed in the Superior Court of San Francisco is the first test of the state's Online Privacy Protection Act of 2004. If found guilty, Delta could face a fine of $2,500 for each download.
Netflix is in trouble for something Reed Hastings said on Facebook. It wasn't even sexy. Back in July, Hastings bragged about the number of hours of content that Netflix users were watching. The SEC says that's a material notice and should have been disclosed properly under SEC rules. Netflix received a Wells notice indicating a recommendation that the full Securities and Exchange Commission take action.
The latest Call of Duty and Halo sequels sold like hotcakes, but weren't enough to prevent an 11% drop in annual U.S. video game sales. That's according to research firm NPD that analysts sales figures for November, which doesn't include digital downloads. But the month, it's the month that the Wii U launched. Assassin's Creed went on sale, but overall, kind of a quiet month, at least as compared to November 2011, when we had Uncharted 3, Skyrim, Lego Harry Potter 5 through 7, and Modern Warfare 3 all going live.
FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski has written a letter to the FAA urging the agency to enable greater use of tablets, e-readers, and other portable devices. The FAA is currently reevaluating its policies on when electronic devices must be turned off during a flight.
More from FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski. He announced that the four major wireless carriers in the United States will accept text messages to 911 by May 15th, 2014. Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile will start deploying this ability in 2013 before the nationwide launch in 2014. And the carriers will accept photos, videos, as well as texts.
AMD just reduced its order of silicon wafers from GlobalFoundries from $500 million to $150 $15 million. While this helps AMD avoid inventory surpluses and write-downs, it also means it has to pay GlobalFoundries a $320 million penalty for the short notice. But hey, they still save $65 million.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Google's finishing up its auction of Motorola's set-top box business as it continues to downsize that hardware unit. And we've got quite a few anonymous people familiar with this matter. Two people involved in the process said that they expected bids to be between $1.5 billion to $2 billion. Yet another source said it could go as high as $2.5 billion. Google has reportedly indicated it could help finance a deal as well.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Lantronics. Lantronics, whether you're at home or office, helps you print from your iPhone and your iPad, any iOS device. Printing can be a challenge from those devices if your printer isn't AirPrint compatible. How do you get the thing over the wire? There's no Ethernet cable on an iPad or an iPhone. AirPrint makes it easy. But if you're like, well, I already got a printer and I bought it before AirPrint was around, don't worry. XPrint Server enables wireless printing from your iPad, your iPhone, your iPod Touch, and it eliminates the need to print through apps, install software, or email yourself documents for printing. And it works with the USB or network printer you already own, whether it's wired or wireless. Print directly from the iOS native menu. You don't have to add any software. You don't have to buy any apps. Supports more than 4,000 top brand network printers. And it's really easy. I was kind of skeptical when I first plugged it in. It was amazing because networking can be so complicated. Lantronics has figured it out. You plug it in and it finds your printer on the network, and then you just go and you choose the option from your whatever you're printing from on the iPad. It's kind of amazing. The Home Edition is $99 and supports up to 8 USB and 2 network printers. And the Office Edition is $199 and supports up to 8 USB and unlimited network printers. Allows your USB printer to be shared with all the users over a network. Basically turns it, you know, a little nice side effect there, turns it into a network printer. So go to xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer for the month of December. Use the code HOLIDAY2012 and receive 20% off on your order. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit and at checkout, enter that code HOLIDAY2012. We thank Lantronics for their support of Tech News Today. Well, we mentioned yesterday in the news fuse that T-Mobile's getting the iPhone in 2013, but the other shoe that dropped in that was T-Mobile saying death to subsidies.
No more subsidies in 2013. If you want your phone to run on T-Mobile, you're going to have to buy it outright or do installment plans. So theoretically for the customer, they might not see a huge bill up front. There's a quote from the T-Mobile CEO, John Legere. He says, he didn't mention the iPhone, but he says, quote, "You may pay $99 for the most iconic device in the world, and then you may get 20 months worth of call it $15 to $20 a month on the device installment plan. It's very cheap out of pocket, very low." T-Mobile is also shifting entirely to its unsubsidized value plans, which offer customers a much cheaper rate for voice and data as well. T-Mobile said that 80% of its activations in the last quarter were for value plans, so they think that's the way to go. If you're looking at an unlocked, unsubsidized iPhone, that's usually about $650 to $850. So it looks like they are moving very aggressively in being this, I guess, scrappy company when it comes to one of the larger carriers out there. Darren, what do you think of T-Mobile's move to just drop subsidies entirely?
I love this. I think that this is very bold of them, and I hope that the other carriers kind of follow suit because, I think the whole idea of the two-year contract with subsidy phone may have worked 10 years ago. I don't think it works with the kind of speed at which new devices are coming out and the thirst that people have, or the techno lust, if you will, for those new devices. I have switched over to doing that with the various carriers. And, you end up saving in the long run if you just, buy the device and go with a value plan. T-Mobile could really differentiate themselves from the other of the four major wireless carriers by doing this. I hope to see, more of this. It's great that they're also mentioning things like not a subsidy per se, but a kind of payment plan. So you would only spend, $100 up front, and then you would pay $20 a month or so for however many months to pay off the phone, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I'd love to see more of this.
Tom, what do you think about this from a business standpoint? I mean, Sprint spent a ton of money to get the iPhone. A lot of companies have always complained about how much the iPhone and other devices cost. Now, T-Mobile doesn't have to foot that bill.
Yeah, well, this is where all of the companies have been trending. We've had a lot of stories on Tech News Today about the fact that customers prefer unlocked phones in greater numbers all the time. So what T-Mobile is doing, as you mentioned, because they're the scrappy underdog of the big four in the U.S. anyway, is saying, we're going to jump on that trend now. We don't care if we piss off the device makers a little bit. We don't care about the accounting problems that it might cause because we can't count that contract in there. We can't afford to wait. We're going to jump on this trend early. And that's what you usually see. You know, you think back to DRM and music sales back in the mid part of the last decade. Who was it that went DRM free first? It was EMI. It was Universal. It was the smaller record companies first. It's the market leaders that are more conservative. And that makes sense because things are working for them. They're not going to change anything unless they have to. T-Mobile's like, we got to try anything and everything to get going and jumpstart our business. So the key question, I think, is can they convince enough people to lay out the money for unlocked phones, given that they are going to not have subsidies? What are these plans going to look like? Are these plans going to be compelling enough to say, hey, you're going to save money? I mean, that's what Ting does. Ting says, we're gonna make your billing clear and we're going to save you money. And they have the whole calculator. T-Mobile's going to have to do some kind of marketing plan like that to convince people, hey, it's actually worth it to lay out a lot of money in advance for these phones.
They also... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying that's what I'm excited about because, you know, well, Ting is awesome and I love Ting, don't get me wrong. T-Mobile has kind of like a bigger marketing budget and they could really just get the word out. And even just getting consumers thinking about the fact that it's actually less expensive when you own the device and you go with a more value plan, that could be huge. And it sounds like T-Mobile already understands that their CEO is even saying that on average, their customers that go with value plans stay for 2 months longer than the contract people, and that even four out of five customers signing up for new plans are going with their value plans. So
yeah, but that makes accountants nervous. This is not about the customer, right? It's about perceptions. The perceptions of the accountants is, well, that's been the trend, but if we lock someone into a contract, we can bank on that money coming in. That makes my P&L look really good going forward and makes my boss happy. On the customer end, even though you definitely save money with an unlocked plan, that upfront cost just makes people go, well, but if I lock in for 2 years, that phone only costs me $99, and I don't have a lot of money in my bank account.
Yeah, but that's why I think this announcement that they're also going to have installment plans makes it a little bit easier for the consumer to go over. Because then what T-Mobile can argue is even with our plans, with our value plan and the installment plan, it might still be cheaper than other alternatives out there. Thing is, T-Mobile's got to fight to survive at this point with their merger with Metro PCS. This is really aggressive. This is a really unusual move. The other wireless carriers don't do this.
I mean, Good for them, yeah.
They have the abilities to do this, but this is what T-Mobile's plan is. They're calling themselves the Uncarrier, as it was in the webcast.
Like 7-Up.
Kind of. So it's 7-Up still successful, I guess. So it's T-Mobile
Up. Is it? I don't know. you know what would be successful? Telling the citizens of the United States that they can use their iPad or Kindle during takeoff and landing on an airplane. And FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski, as we mentioned, sent a letter to the FAA, to Chairman Michael Huerta, saying, please enable greater use of tablets, e-readers, and other portable devices during takeoff. Now, Genachowski is the FCC, so he knows a lot about wireless and how it works. I guess it's in his remit to encourage the use, responsible use of that, those kinds of devices that take advantage of the spectrum he administers. The FAA did announce a study group in August to review electronic device policies. Pilots have iPads in the cockpit, so they obviously aren't terribly dangerous, at least in small numbers, if they're on. I mean, that's what their manual is on. You would think that they would need access to that at all times. Passengers are allowed to use Wi-Fi at cruising altitude. So here's my question. Darren, what do you think? Should the FCC keep its nose out of flight safety and leave that to the FAA? Or is this evidence that the ban really has little or no basis and it's just antiquated and the FCC's trying to nudge the FAA into the future?
Well, I definitely think they need nudging because who else is doing that? The consumers can whine and moan all they want during takeoff, but you know it's really going to take like another agency like the FCC to kind of push them into the future. And already with Wi-Fi on flights after 10,000 feet, we've seen that they're safe on planes. In fact, anecdotally, I know someone who may have left a Wi-Fi pineapple on before the plane takes off. And just from anecdotal evidence, nobody turns their phone into airplane mode before they take off. Like they all should, just to save their battery.
Save battery life. Exactly. That's what I was
saying. Yeah. But just from my experience, people leave their Wi-Fi devices on all the time anyway. So, if that hasn't caused any problems thus far, and as you said, the pilots are even using their iPads, for their maps and charts and whatnot. I think that it only makes sense that this trickles down to the consumer that's actually, paying for those airlines to exist.
Now, I've heard several defenses of the ban on electronics during takeoff and landing. One is that they can turn into projectiles. I have heard people who are experts in the industry say that it actually is not the reason, that it could be a reason, that it could make sense if everybody
helps the cause.
But books are also projectiles. So I don't think is actually the basis for this rule. The one that makes sense to me is they're saying, sure, lots of people do leave their iPhones on and we do have iPads in the cockpit, but what we're trying to reduce as close to zero as possible is any incidence of radio interference. Now, just having one electronic device on during takeoff and landing won't necessarily raise that possibility, but having a full plane full of 100 or more people who all might have an electronic device on, suddenly that increases the potential for radio interference. And you don't want to increase the potential for interference during takeoff and landing of an airplane. So the idea of these rules is not that one iPad on is going to crash the plane, or even that they don't realize that people forget to turn things off. They're trying to reduce the amount of interference until they can prove that it won't actually raise the possibility. And when you're up in an airplane, you want that possibility of interference with the navigation to be as close to zero as possible. Ayaz, what do you think of that?
Well, I mean, the FCC obviously knows what they're talking about when it comes to communication devices. That's what they do, right? They're worried about communications at all. But when it comes to airplanes and air safety, the FAA, at least if I remember this right, they want to test out like every single device and every single configuration on every single kind of plane before they can certify it. And that takes a long time. So for the FCC to basically say, look, these are classes of devices. You don't need to test out that Razer M and that Razer Max HD and the Razer Max. Just test one on this this kind of class approach. It might be a little easier to get these things through because this is the way we are modern, right? We always have these devices. Although if the FAA wants to drag its feet on this because they think that it's going to cause a safety concern, I don't know if people are going to shy away from I kind of like my plane in the air.
I don't think the safety concern with tablets and e-readers is even, the fact that they may have a Wi-Fi chip on. I think, a lot of people overlook the fact that, the laptop, the tablet that you bring on the plane has a lithium ion battery in it. And that thing could potentially produce a chemical fire that you'd have a hard time putting out on a plane.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we've lost our connection with Sarah Lane in Paris. She had valiantly headed down to the business center because the hotel she's staying at lost its Wi-Fi. And we had her on for the whole news fuse, and then we lost her. We've been trying to get her back. What?
No. I was just, at least we had her for the news fuse.
Oh, I thought you were I've been waiting for your signal that we got her back. I thought that yay meant we got her back.
Sorry.
Is it at least we had Paris or at least we had the news fuse?
We'll always have the news fuse, Sarah Lane. This was going to be her story, but scalpers have laid siege to the iPad Mini in Beijing. No huge crowds to get the iPad Mini, which launched in China, but scalpers out in droves, Apple trying to clamp down on it, but Apple requires Chinese customers to participate in an online lottery one day in advance to buy the Wi-Fi version of the iPad Mini at its 7 retail stores in China. The scalpers are getting a bad rap. The iPhone 4S launch in January caused a riot. State-run Xinhua news agency blamed rival groups of scalpers vying to buy up as many as possible of the limited supplies of the device. You can probably tell who the scalpers are when you're outside the store. Wall Street Journal reporter was harassed for recording the scene. An Apple employee said of the incident, "We can't protect you outside the store." So analysts are divided on this. Mark Newman, a senior analyst at Sanford Bernstein, said global reception of the iPad Mini has been modest, and Chinese consumers might be lukewarm to the new device due to the availability of similar but cheaper products in China. Whereas David Wolf, chief executive of marketing consulting firm Wolf Group, said the device is appealing to consumers in China. Apple's going to make the iPad technology available to a market that either couldn't afford it or couldn't fit it into their lives, and that maybe this lukewarm reception has to do with fear of riots or scalpers. Zayas, what do you think? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, the Mini is kind of, it's kind of a, like an in-between product in the first place. I mean, the reception in the U.S. was kind of like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So I don't know if it's if the iPad Mini is going to be received with any great, you know, fanfare. But when it comes to the iPhone 5, which I think is launching next week, that's the one I'm going to really keep my eye on to see if, I mean, more scalpers, riots, and all that other stuff, because there's been a pent-up demand for that phone.
Sarah Lane is back.
I can officially go, yay.
So sorry, you guys. Désolé, as they say in Francais. I got the guy at the business center just hanging out behind me. he's very apologetic, let me tell you.
So we did all the setup for the iPad. Did you hear that?
Yeah, well, no.
Okay, so
I didn't. I didn't really, but I'm aware of what story we're talking about. And please, you know, stop me if I say anything that you guys have already covered. But what I think is most interesting about this is, okay, so Apple put some stuff in place based on riots during the iPhone 4S launch. I mean, and by all accounts, at least from Chinese media, a lot of that were riots between rival scalper gangs, if you even want to call them that. I mean, you know, these were people who were trying to get as many units as possible, and things got a little dicey. So Apple said, "Okay, well, we're not gonna let people do this. You know, you got to reserve it in advance."
We went through all your notes already, by the way. That's what I was trying to tell you. So,
oh, okay, all right. So, what's interesting then about all of this is all a, you know, matter to keep the peace, right? Because there's an issue with scalpers. Yet right now, enough scalpers have still been able to be able to, you know, go in and get their two units as they were promised. You know, maybe they don't look like scalpers. I don't know. I mean, maybe their name isn't associated with any sort of scalper database. But then they're all just hanging out outside of the store with stacks of iPad Minis, presumably selling them at like a very small discount or something. And people are buying them that way. I mean, they wouldn't go through all this trouble unless this was an actual, a logical way to make money. And that seems very accepted. And, you know, they've been pushing around people a little bit, and the Apple Store employees say, hey, that's not our private property. We can't do anything about it. You probably shouldn't be here. So it doesn't sound like the problem is solved at all, especially since it almost seems like it's keeping, you know, individuals away, because they either don't want the hassle of whatever's going on with the scalpers, or they figure, well, I'll just buy it from one of these people online later on anyway.
So do you think that the lukewarm reception of the iPad Mini is because of that fear?
I think the lukewarm reception on day one is probably a little bit because of that. I don't think that we can blame scalpers on a Chinese market that simply isn't all that interested in a smaller, cheaper iPad, either because it's not that exciting or because it still seems too expensive. I mean, there are a lot of variables here. They have, in the tablet marketplace in China, you have a lot of other options. But no, I mean, I think it's an interesting first impression. But no, I don't think it's scalpers alone. I think what we're seeing right now is that scalpers were the most interested party at launch.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. They give you fast and easy tools. I use them all the time. Beautiful templates, 100% drag and drop functionality for all customization tools. There's a new page builder tool called the Layout Engine that enables you to customize pages in just seconds by adding blocks of content. You just add your photos, add your videos, your text, your social media content, anything you're pulling in from Twitter or Facebook, and immediately preview the layout as you go so you see how that page is coming together. Squarespace is trying to get the code out of your way so you can concentrate on the message. Makes it easy for anyone to build a website. And they've got better social media integration. Automatically import, sync, and publish to and from social media with just a few clicks. You can pull photos from Instagram right into your site. Instantly sync pages and galleries to Facebook. Auto-publish new blog entries on Twitter. And add those buttons. If you want those buttons for people to share your blog post, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, LinkedIn, Pinterest, stumble upon more. Squarespace is exceptionally well designed, and mobile responsive designs mean it looks good on any platform, whether you're on a phone, whether you're on a tablet, whatever. But don't take my word for it. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com right now and just sign up for a free account. You give them an email address so you can confirm that it's you, and that's it. You don't need to give them a credit card or a bunch of other information. Just try it out. Start building your website, and if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT12 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's monthly or annual plans. You get 10% off. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT12. Show your support for Tech News Today, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Everything you need to create an exceptional website at squarespace.com. So we mentioned Netflix in trouble with the SEC for saying some stuff on Facebook. Reed Hastings posted in June that the monthly viewing figures had, or he posted in July, that the monthly viewing figures had passed 1 billion hours in June for the first time. Now, the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission here in the United States, says that that violated Regulation Fair Disclosure, or R, you'll hear it called Reg FD a lot, Section 13A of the Securities and Exchange Act, and Rules 13A-11 and 13A-15. Rule 13A-11 requires issuers to file current reports. It's called Form 8K. 13A-15 requires disclosure controls. So the SEC issued what's called a Wells notice, meaning that the SEC staff will recommend that the full commission ask either for a cease and desist action and or possibly a civil injunction. Now, Hastings wrote on Facebook, "We think posting over 200,000 people is very public, especially because many of my subscribers are reporters and bloggers." He also disputes that the viewing hours issue was material information, although the stock did rise from $67.85 the day before he posted that to $81.72 3 days later. Hastings argues that the stock rise could be attributed to the positive Citigroup research report from the evening before his posting. But either way, he's got this notice to deal with now. Now, this doesn't mean they're in trouble yet. They can resolve it, possibly. But pay attention to what he is accused of before you jump to the conclusion of like, hey, Facebook's pretty public. It wasn't a private post. Anybody could see it. How is that not public notice? He violated Rule 13A-11, which means you have to file a form. The form is 8K. And in fact, yesterday, Netflix filed Form 8K, letting investors know that they had been sent a Wells notice. So if I looked it up on Yahoo, actually. There's Form 8K for Netflix, Inc. How many of you saw this, right? Yeah, you're all following the Yahoo Finance Form 8K thing. But that's the rule. Now, we could argue about whether it's a good rule or not, but what the SEC is saying is not, oh, Yahoo or Netflix didn't make it public. What they're saying is you didn't file a form. That's material information. We don't care if you put it on Facebook. You have to file Form 8K.
Well, I mean, Reed Hastings kind of has a history of kind of shooting his mouth off a little publicly. I mean, we've had these bizarre YouTube videos with the whole Quickster debacle. Pretty ill-advised things. Maybe he should start taking it a little bit more seriously since he's kind of running a monstrously large company. I know these are just rules, and they're just, oh, they seem a little silly, and it seems like, oh, it's hard to find this Form 8K. But you're running a company. Like, why is nobody advising this guy, or why is he listening to no one? You should not be putting this information on Facebook first anyway. You could do it second. How hard would it be to say, oh, could somebody look over my Facebook feed before I hit publish because I might get us in trouble again? I mean, Netflix doesn't need the SEC on its neck.
We could argue that the rule is stupid, that yes, absolutely, telling 200,000 people on Facebook about something is actually much more effective. But that's a different argument than did you break the rule. So Darren, when you look at this, do you think that the billion hours of video is a piece of material information that would send the stock price up?
You know, I'm not really an investor, so I wouldn't say if that would like sway me one way or another. I'm actually not a fan of that kind of stuff. Nor am I a fan of bureaucracy, but the way that I figure it is, if you're going to play the stock game, you got to play by the rules. And whether or not that, like you said, whether that rule is merited or not is up for debate. But, you know, it's stupid not to play by them. In fact, it's irresponsible. So, you know, I understand the position of like, oh, but I made it public. And either I'm interneting wrong, as I often do, or I can't figure out the Facebook. But I tried to follow the actual post that Reed Hastings made.
Oh, they've removed the post from Facebook at this point.
Okay, that's why I can't see it. Because I go to it, and it's all like, oh, log into the Facebook. And I'm like, I don't Facebook, so where's the thing? And so maybe it is a public post, but it's just gone.
Sarah, do you think that monthly viewing figures are material information? Because that seems to be the best defense, is to say this isn't an investor piece of information.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a piece of information that is extremely interesting to investors, and they should all know about that. Whether or not 200,000 people on a public post on Facebook constitutes public is very interesting, because Reed Hastings is probably right. He probably has a lot of people who work in the kind of specific media that would spread the word should he post on Facebook about something like this. You know, this is like, hey, look at us. We've hit 1 billion hours. This is big news. Everybody go write blog posts, which is actually exactly what they did. But it rules are rules. And I think that this is a very silly rule. It's like, how much time went by between the two? Not much at all. But if you're a company, you have to play by those rules. Or, I don't know, figure out some way to try to push legislation forward so that these aren't rules going forward in the future. You know, it's like, if there's an exception for Reed Hastings, then there'd have to be a lot of other exceptions. And then I think we get into trouble.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that the viewing figures topping 1 billion hours is necessarily material, but I think they probably, most of the times in these situations, companies are rather be safe than sorry.
But Tom, say like it was, okay, let's just assume for instance that...
Oh, if it was, then he broke the rule. There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay, and in that case, though, do you feel like a posting on Facebook is substantial to...
Oh, I believe it's substantial, but I also believe it broke the rule. Those two things are, it's sort of irrelevant. You can't just say like, oh, I've decided that putting something on Facebook is the same as Form 8K. That's not the way government works. That's what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that, I could see if Netflix would have a press release about this, touting their numbers. It sounds like something they would do. Say, we got 1 billion hours. If that's something that they would bother to put a press release out about, or if Reed Hastings is going to talk about it, maybe it is material. Why is Reed Hastings even saying it in the first place? Not just saying, oh, we had a sandwich today. It's like, no, we had 1 billion hours.
Had a billion sandwiches today.
The way that I feel is, and I hate bureaucracy, but I totally, in this case, understand the need for that Form 8K or whatever, because, say that you're, on an ISP that doesn't permit you access to Facebook. Facebook isn't a public resource like the SEC can be understood to provide with that form.
Yeah. All right, let's move along to Google kicking off the small businesses. No more free stuff for you, small businesses.
Less free stuff, less stuff for people, for free anyway. Google will no longer offer Google Apps for businesses for free. Companies of all sizes now have to sign up for Google's premium version. Google was touting like it gives you 24/7 phone support and you get 25 gigabyte inbox and a 99.9% uptime, but it's $50 per user per year. If you're already a user of the free Google Apps for businesses, and it's like under 10 people, that stays the same. So you're not going to have to start paying all of a sudden. Google Apps for Education is going to be available for free as well for schools and universities. But before 2011, only businesses with more than 50 employees were charged for the suite, and that got changed to 10 recently. Now, if you want to have Google Apps for your business, you're going to have to pay. Tom, I'm kind of curious. Now, Google's made this move when it comes to like its Maps API. They started charging money for that. It was very popular. People moved away from that. You think this is going to scare small businesses in the future to stay away from Google because they have this fear of, this product could change?
Yeah, the fear of actually being charged for a service will totally ruin someone. Like, no one's ever done that before. It's a crazy idea. I think it's entirely different from the Maps API. Maps API was an API. This was a service. And what Google was doing from the very beginning was, the first one's free. We're going to give you some free stuff to get you in the door and make you pay. Most people pay for this stuff. So I think they probably very carefully evaluated how many people were on here using it. They're not, if I have this right, they're not kicking off the people who already have free accounts, right, like me,
yeah,
that I never use.
Yeah, they're sort of grandfathered into the free thing.
So, I think it's fine. Sarah?
Yeah, I know that it's disappointing. In fact, I just talked to somebody recently who was telling me about her very, very cash-strapped business idea, and that she was going to use Google Apps, and it was free, and she didn't even have her own domain. And I said something like, a domain. I renew my domain every year for what, like $40? And she's like, that's a lot. I want to cut costs as much as possible. So this would be the sort of thing where if she was forced to upgrade to $50 a year, it would really matter. It sounds like she won't have that problem because she'll, of course, she's already using it, so she'll be grandfathered in. But You know, even though I know it's disappointing for anybody who's sort of bootstrapped and counting pennies to hear, listen, we just want to make the Google Apps experience more consistent across the board and a better product for everybody. It sounds exactly like what this is. You know, you get the free version people who don't get these certain bells and whistles that the larger businesses do, and an annual fee of $50. You know, for many of the businesses, it's not the end of the world. And it's just Google saying, hey, listen, let's put our resources into one single product rather than an inferior one and a better one.
I mean, it's $50 per user per year. So that's not just like a flat rate unless you only stick with one employee,
still
I guess.
Still pretty cheap.
Well,
yeah, and right. When you actually...
You're saying there's in 10 employees or less. So you're still... I mean, I think it's not $10 per year. And thanks for clarifying that, but you know, or rather 50. But you know, for five employees, let's say, you know, it's still somewhat reasonable for a better product.
Right, and to stack that up against the competition, talking about other products, Microsoft's entry-level Office 365 stuff is like $72 a year, and that's to a maximum of 50 users. So if you've got a company with more than 50 users, that's up to $72 per year per person, and then they go all the way up to $240 a seat.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's the maturing of Google. And someone else will come in and fill in this space. The space of, you know, the first one's free, apps on your domain. That's now wide open for somebody else to fill in. Let's go on to Pinterest, cutting off the spammers. The fight continues, Sarah.
Yeah, it's a good story. If you're on Pinterest regularly enough, you'll know that spam is really rampant on Pinterest. It's almost built up perfectly for a spammer, in fact, because it's like you see this picture of a product and you're interested and you click through and all of a sudden, oh, wait, this is linking to something else entirely. And it's about buying, you know, prescription drugs from a really shady retailer offshore. Pinterest has always allowed spam reporting. But actually was not killing a lot of spam accounts. Just recently, many people might notice, they killed a huge amount at once. Pinterest engineering lead John Jenkins says, if you are one of these people who have very, very large follower drops and you have a lot of followers and you saw a big follower drop, well, you know, you're not actually losing anybody who's a legitimate user of the service. You're just losing a bunch of junk. I mean, the same holds true for people who see huge Twitter follower drops. That always happens. And it almost always it's some sort of spam killing operation. If you don't have a lot of spam accounts that are following you, then you won't even notice. What's interesting is that Pinterest apparently is one of those networks that's a victim to people buying fake followers. Why is that? Well, I mean, there are all sorts of reasons, you know, affiliate fees when you've got some sort of a Pinterest account, you know, and that you're linking to, you know, maybe your Amazon account, that sort of thing. There's an incentive maybe to have as many followers as possible. But it makes me think... Instagram, the All Things D article, Liz Gaines was complaining, saying, well, this is great for the folks, you know, at Pinterest. Any Instagram user who follows someone with, more than 10,000, who has more than 10,000 followers, say, or celebrity accounts, those sorts of things, know that the comment section is almost unusable. I mean, it's just all spam. I happen to be somebody that always reports spam on Instagram, but there aren't as many of me as there are of them. And I've also noticed, and this is, again, just a kind of a funny thing while traveling, is that I've been using Foursquare quite a bit, the Foursquare Explore option. So I'm in an unfamiliar neighborhood, and I want to go to a great place, and, you know, what's out there? And Foursquare is riddled with spam, absolutely riddled with, I mean, it's absolute pure junk. You know, people just linking you to their other websites, because they know that you're in some section looking at tips from strangers. So this is the problem it's on pretty much, I guess, every network that reaches that, hey, we're a success kind of user base. And I mean, good for Pinterest, but there's a lot more spam to kill. Am I right?
I don't see Instagram spam. Where do you see Instagram spam?
Holy moly. Okay,
I'm not trying to get all John Dvorak, I don't get spam on you. I just never see it.
No. I mean, I you're very lucky. Do you not follow any sort of like celebrities or maybe like the National Geographic account or anybody who has kind of a large number of followers?
No.
And I was suggesting
I follow you, so I do follow a celebrity.
But I'm not.
So you see it in the comments? Is that where you see it?
Yes, that's exactly it.
All right.
So it's not so much, ooh, there's an Instagram account and maybe this person isn't real, because you could just not follow them and it doesn't matter. You never see it. It's the commenting. Gotcha. It's like when I tweet about an iPad mini, I'll get five replies from spam accounts because they're looking for keywords.
Mm-hmm. I think I may have seen that once or twice. I don't see it all the time, but I also don't follow the accounts that you're describing, those brand accounts or like, you know, superstar accounts.
Yeah, I don't know. Darren, am I alone? Am I alone in my spam crusade?
I don't Pinterest or Instagram, but I think that it's great, though, that they're having to fight this battle, because it just means that they've, like you said, like gotten to that point. It's a coming of age thing for all social networks. And like you said with Foursquare, if you don't stay on top of it, it can totally consume you.
And cleaning up spam means you're actually getting what you want to get out of the service. I mean, if Pinterest didn't make these moves, if Instagram didn't, what would you do? You'd be like, I'm tired of this dang service because all I'm seeing is garbage. I mean, the thing is, you need to clean this stuff up. And even though it might hurt numbers and be like, oh, I have less followers. Oh, no. It's like, well, those weren't real. What was the point of that? So if we all lose them at the same time, it's not that big a deal. So hopefully we'll see nice, clean internet. Maybe YouTube will be nicer soon. One day.
Sorry.
That is the most hopeful, positive thing I think I've ever heard Ayaz say.
There you go. That's my dream for the future. That's my I have a dream speech.
He doesn't really hate.
Is that like your Christmas wish?
Yeah, all so I want cute. For Christmas is my two front teeth and
Ayaz's
YouTube
Christmas
commenters.
Speech. All right, let's finish up with the randomizer.
Randomizer.
The Verge pointing us to a South African newspaper, the Cape Times, which has created some amusing riffs on the self-portrait. They've taken iconic historic photos, and they've photoshopped them very well so that you actually, like, see Winston Churchill holding out his arm as if he's taking a picture of himself smoking the cigar, or the kiss on Victory in Europe Day, or even Kate and Will like holding the camera as if he's doing a self portrait. They're dang convincing, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They look really good.
Oh my God, I love these. The historic selfie.
Yeah.
Well, these are really well-framed shots. I mean, you got to be really good at this when you got your arm that way. I mean, it would be nice if I could shoot that way. I know they're touched up. It's a nice. I mean, people are going to think this is real. By the way,
hold down the shutter and keep wiggling. There you go.
Nobody thinks they're real.
Somebody's going to.
Well, maybe one or two people.
That's going to show up on Reddit. I swear.
I'm just impressed at how well they're done.
Two people.
Yeah.
Don't give them too much of the benefit of the doubt.
In a thousand years, historians will look back and be confused, and they're like, it'll be a debate.
we're all photos are going to be messed up.
You know what's going to happen is, like, some kids in high school, right, who've never seen the original, you know, the military kiss photo is going to, they're, you know, someone's going to say, you know what that was?
Yeah.
That was just him. You know, like his new camera that he got.
It's like those kids who think the Beatles ripped off Justin Bieber's haircut. They're going to.
They totally did.
Yeah.
By time travel.
Paul really is dead, though.
Miss him. Miss him. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Oh, let's do that. Hey, so those 27-inch iMac orders are now shipping in January. It's not a huge delay. I mean, it was 1 to 2 weeks, and now it's 3 to 4 weeks. But still, if you're one of the people who had ordered online, I know that that's just really annoying. But they are coming. First week in January. Nintendo has begun to sell the Wii U in Japan. That's tomorrow, actually, is the official launch. So December 8th. Also tomorrow, the iPhone 5 is hitting South Korea. We talked about the fact that South Korea was one of the largest markets of sort of a bundle of countries that were getting rolled out, you know, in sort of a staggered rollout through the rest of the year for the iPhone 5. So that starts tomorrow.
Woohoo! Actually, it's that perceptual barrier of the new year that I think gets people upset about the shipping date slipping into January for those iMacs. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We've got an email from Ken Crayley. It says, hello, TNT crew. Remember last year when you and Leo were talking about on other Twitch shows and on Tech News Today about how MLB and other sports leagues were blacking out games during the postseason and World Series? Well, then he points us to an article that might be of some interest to us. It could mean sports blackouts might be coming to an end. We shall see.
Does U.S. District Judge Shira Scheindlin on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, said that the plaintiffs have plausibly alleged that the NHL, when they play, and the MLB have used their monopoly power to restrict the broadcast of television programming in a manner that harms competition. That doesn't mean that the class action suit will prevail and eliminate blackouts, but I think Comcast, DirecTV, who are also named in the suit, thought that this was just going to get dismissed. It was going to get tossed out of court. And the judge is like, no, you have a monopoly. So you may be still acting fairly, but we need to try it.
So a world without YouTube commenters that are awful and no blackouts?
And no blackouts.
What a future.
But if this is a class action, doesn't that mean that nothing's going to change and everybody's just going to get like some free nosebleed?
We'll get 36 cents.
Tickets? Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if that's how it works. Well, Sarah Lane, thank you so much for being so persistent in fighting to stay on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, you guys are my number one priority. I don't care where I am. This business center never saw it coming. I'm not even wearing pants. But that's just,
well,
it doesn't
in
matter.
France, How's that of course
than any
not.
Other day?
Wait, well, French people wear pants?
It's a rather busy business center, but they'll get over it. Fine.
Well, thank your new French friends for helping you out, too. Darren, what's going on over at HAK5.org?
Oh, get this on the latest episode of Hack 5. We're hacking Android phones with USB rubber ducky. And also check out ThreatWire. Just came out last night. We're talking myself. That's not Sarah Lane. Sarah Lane wasn't there. Shannon Morris was there, as well as Patrick Norton talking about the ITU. Do you guys know about this? Yeah, I'm sure you've talked about it to death on Tech News Today. But we're covering the ITU WCIT acronym foo.
Yeah, acronym fest. 2012. Hey, if you would like to be on the show, we're going to do our open mic show again, and open mic submissions are open. We'll be recording the show Monday, December 17th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. If you're available at that time, so check your local listings to see what time zone, where it's going to fall in your time zone. And if you're interested in being on the show, email tnt@twit.tv with the subject line open mic 2012. Let us know who you are, what you do, and why you'd like to take part. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back on Monday with John Strickland. See you then.